I want to tell you about a new investigative podcast called She Has a Name. It's about a young mother who disappeared in Detroit in the summer of 1987. She Has a Name tells the story of loss and redemption, mending broken family ties, and facing the trauma experienced by countless individuals who've lost loved ones to violence. Join host Tanya Mosley and her nephew Antonio as they unravel the secrets of what happened to Anita Wiley. You can search for She Has a Name in your podcast app.
This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and with me in the studio is Kerry Jr. II. He is the show's producer.
How you doing, Stephen?
Hey, Kerry.
I'm not the only one in the studio. We got a pretty full list today.
We got a lot of folks to get to today, no question. So I want to start here, though, Kerry.
Yeah.
How excited are you for the first presidential debate tonight,
between
Donald Trump and President Joe Biden?
The track record that these two have in terms of debates, for former President Trump in particular, I'm not particularly super excited. I do think there's something to be gleaned about, like, what this particular election might be about, different issues, the economy and all that kind of stuff. So it might shake out differently, but I'm expecting there to be a bit of a back and forth, some stuff that's going to be
a I'm a little anxious about it, too.
Virality.
I guess I don't know what to expect. And I'm going to watch, of course, because I'm curious, but also because we're going to be talking about that debate tomorrow on the show. But the reason I bring it up is because former President Donald Trump, also visited Detroit recently, spoke at a black church, and that's really the subject of our show today. This reach out, this appeal of Trump and other Republicans to black and brown voters, and how they're doing it, why they're doing it, and whether it's successful.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking in the way we wanted to create this episode is from the perspective that the American population is diversifying, right? And so in order for our political candidates to win and be seated in the presidency seat, they have to appeal to a more diverse electorate. And so we are seeing the Republican Party reach out to black and Latino voters. And this is one of those efforts that we saw. It was earlier this month where former President Donald Trump visited 180 Church in Detroit, where they hosted a community forum. And in that, they had a roundtable of conversation with the president, other local members of the city of Detroit. And as I said before, in this effort, they're trying to appeal to a growing, diverse population in this country, because although the Republican Party and Trump did get some growth and support from Hispanics and black voters, overwhelmingly they vote Democratic. So
Well, and there's also a recent history between the black community and Republican politics that is, I mean, to put it politely, it's strained, right? Republicans made conscious choices in the 70s and 80s to abandon lots of their historic support for things like civil rights, voting rights access, a lot of the things that African-American voters think about when they go to the polls. Also, we don't have to think back too far here in Detroit to 2020, when supporters of Donald Trump showed up to try to discount legally cast ballots here in the city of Detroit. And so this outreach from the Republican Party, I think, takes place against the backdrop of all of those other things. And the question is, how genuine is it? What is it that Republicans are trying to sell to African Americans in terms of what they would support?
And what is that ideal pitch? Like, if there were going to be a pitch from Republicans that would appeal to black and Latino voters, what does that look like,
right?
One that would actually get people to say, let me reconsider this.
Yeah.
And so today we have our guest, first up, one of our many guests. We have Pastor Lorenzo Sewell. He is the pastor of the 180 Church. He invited President Donald Trump to come visit his church earlier this month. He'll be joining us. Then later on, we have three other guests who we'll introduce later, who will give us kind of a roundtable and insight into the Black and Latino vote.
Yeah, let's get started. Pastor Lorenzo Sewell, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you so much. I am so Holy Ghost happy to be here this morning.
It's great to have you here in the studio with us. So I want to start with that big question that I think lots of folks have. You hosted former President Donald Trump at your church recently. Tell me why.
Well, first of all, I want to say to every listener, and thank you for having me. It's awesome to be across from another Black man who has a voice in our city. I never invited him. I never asked him to come. Adversely, I have asked President Joe Biden, Rashida Tlaib, Gary Peters, and Sheree Tanadar to help solve the housing epidemic that we have in our community. So I want to set the record straight. I never asked him to come. He asked to come to a praying church.
He asked you.
Exactly. And I thought it was a joke. That's well noted. And I do believe that anyone is able to come to the house of God, whether you have 34 convictions or not, because the Bible says, he who has not sinned, let them cast the first stone. So anyone is able to come to the house of God, specifically a politician, to have the church pray and to listen to them. Once again, I have invited the current president. I have invited Rashida Tlaib, and I have invited Sheree Tanadar and Gary Peters to solve housing, right? So specifically,
other members of Congress who represent the city of Detroit.
I've reached out to them, but the former president reached out to us.
Okay, fair enough. What did you expect to hear from him, or what did you expect he could say to the folks who attend your church?
Quite frankly, I didn't care about what he had to say. I care about our community. I care about 48227. I care about Pontiac, Flint, and Saginaw, the least of these, the disenfranchised, the marginalized, those who are, quite frankly, pushed aside and what they would say. We've had community members that have been living specifically in 48227 for 40 years, and they were able to express themselves to the former president as it pertains to criminal justice. So that is an ongoing conversation that we're having with the campaign today, and we're willing to have with any political candidate as it pertains to people of color being put in prison unjustly.
Yeah. And of course, that's a huge issue here in the city of Detroit. I've seen a statistic off and on from time to time that suggests that 1 in 3 African-American males here in the city has been to jail or to prison. I mean, it's an incredibly large number. But what is it, I guess, about the former president and his message that you think connects with these issues or these challenges that people have in your church?
You know, Jesus says that he's been touched with the feelings of our infirmities. And I believe that the former president has been touched as it pertains to the justice system, right? 34 felonies. And obviously, we know that it's his pocketbook that allows him to continue to appeal. But what happens when you're a Black man? What happens when you're a brown man? What happens when you don't have those type of resources? Well, you would be in prison. So his experience now in the criminal justice system, I believe, gives him empathy as it pertains to being able to set our people free that are in prison right now for substances that right now are, quite frankly, legal. And I believe that we should have evidence-based programs that allow our men and our women to be able to get back to their families and be productive in society.
Yeah. So I've heard other folks talk about former President Trump's experience with the criminal justice system and how it may give him perspective, I guess, on the challenges that Black and brown people face with the criminal justice system. I guess for me, the bigger question is the other behavior that this person, this former president, has engaged in. And I'm not talking about his personal behavior. I'm talking about policy.
Sure.
And I'm talking about the party he represents and policy and the things that that party has done to African-Americans, right? I referenced in the open the turning of Republican backs to the issue of civil rights. I mean, documented over and over and over again, a very powerful push against any effort to make up for the terrible wrongs of the past in this country to black voters, black people, the abandonment of civil voting rights. We have a bill that's pending in Congress that would strengthen the Voting Rights Act again. We can't even get a vote on it because of Republican opposition. I guess the big question I have, and I think most African Americans have, is why. What is the appeal of the Republican Party of someone like Donald Trump, given those positions, given the misery that their party is inflicting on our community?
Very good question. And I do believe that Republicans and Democrats should both be indicted as it pertains to black issues, specifically the George Floyd bill on the Democratic side. I look at the Republican side and I see that our former president, he could have pardoned Kwame Kilpatrick twice and he did not. But that's President Obama. But the former President Trump, he did pardon Kwame Kilpatrick. So when we talk about policies, I think that both Democrats and Republicans, they are both at fault as it pertains to the black voice.
I hear that sometimes, but I guess here we're talking about Donald Trump in particular.
Sure.
We're not talking about Democrats, and we can have another show where we talk about
I would love
what Democrats
that.
Have done. But the question here is, you have Republicans don't support the George Floyd Policing Act almost universally. Many, many more Democrats do. It's a Democratic bill. So I think it's probably not fair to say, well, they both are failing
sure.
to pass this. It's Republicans who are standing in the way. And even more important, that opposition to the George Floyd Policing Act sits among a raft of other policies that are just like it, right? Opposition to the VRA, opposition to affirmative action, all kinds of policies that oppose the advance of African American people toward equality. And I guess that's my question.
So I have an opportunity right now through building a relationship with former President Trump, and I'm doing that specifically for the people that we serve in Detroit, mm-hmm. Pontiac, Flint and Saginaw. And I believe whether you're Democrat or Republican, or perhaps you're like me, nonpartisan, I want us to come together to put together a plan that resonates for all of our people. And when I say our people, I'm talking about those that are in 48227, those that we serve in Pontiac, those that our great church has the ability to serve in Flint and in Saginaw, that we've served consistently the last 4 years with partnership with United Way, $14 million we've disseminated, with partnership with Rochester Christian University, 30 students we've given full ride scholarships and we've invested six figures in. So those are the people that I'm thinking about, and I want us to have a voice at the table mm-hmm. instead of being on the menu. And I do agree with you, right? Republicans should be indicted, but I believe Democrats should be indicted. And I believe all of us should come together as black Americans to say these are the policies that we specifically want, whether it be the George Floyd bill, whether it be criminal justice, whether it be housing, whether it be making sure the black dollar stays in the black community. That's one of the things that I do. You ask a question about former President Trump's policies. Well, the Platinum Plan, that is a very clear plan to give over $500 billion to churches, to small businesses, to black-owned communities. I think about Black and Brown Wall Street. I think about Black Bottom. I think about us as black Americans being able to keep our dollar in our community. And quite frankly, that's attractive to me.
Hmm. Did you hear things from the former president when he was here that inspired you or seemed to you as though they might help African Americans, they might lift up our community here in Detroit?
When I spoke to him publicly about keeping the black dollar in the black community, then privately, when I had the opportunity to talk to him about how important it is that we as black people have a political pipeline so that whether you're Democrat or Republican, that we make sure that our community gets equipped politically so that we have a black political pipeline. Think about it. The highest office in our state is ran by a white woman. Think about it. When you look at those that represent us congressionally, they're not of our color, right? So I believe a political pipeline is just as important, meaning equipping leaders that look like us from our community to be able to lead our community. So that was inspiring that he understood that.
Mm-hmm.
And that
he was willing. You think he would do that? You think he would support that?
We got to hold everybody accountable, right? Yeah. I believe.
I'm also curious whether you asked him. The former president has insisted, for instance, that he lost the last election because of fraud. He has he's supported those who have opposed that election here in Detroit, in Washington on January 6th of 2021. This was someone who actively supported the disenfranchisement of African-American voters right here in the city. Did you ask him about that?
We haven't had that conversation, but I plan on having that conversation with him because there have been several friends of mine who run and lead many aspects of the Democratic Party that we've been able to have some very constructive conversations where they're expecting me to bring up these points to our former president. And that's what this is about. It's about the people. It's about those that typically wouldn't have a voice with the leader of the Republican Party. Now they do have a voice. And I just want to steward that well. I want to glorify God. I want to be an honest broker of information to make sure that our people in Detroit, Pontiac, Flint, Saginaw, and beyond can have a voice at the table.
Yeah. Okay. Pastor Sewell, it was really great to have you here. It is very important, of course, to have voices like yours at the table and across the table from our leaders. So I really do appreciate your efforts. Thanks for being here with us on Created Equal.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by a roundtable of folks who have been thinking an awful lot about this relationship between Republicans and the African-American community. Also want to get going with you, the listeners, on the phones. Give us a call and let us know what you think of Donald Trump's visit to Detroit. What do you think of the Republican outreach to black and brown voters? Is it convincing? Is it inspiring? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, #CreatedEqual or @WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
We're back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We just heard from Pastor Lorenzo Sewell. He is the senior pastor at 180 Church, which is the church that hosted former President Donald Trump recently. We are talking about the Republican outreach to black and brown voters, the need for Republicans to diversify their support, and what that outreach looks like. What does it mean? How genuine is it? And how is it reconciled with the raft of Republican policies that seem to oppose African-American progress? We want to switch the format here just a little bit and talk with several people who have been thinking about and researching these questions for some time. Mara Ostfeld is the associate research scientist in the Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan. Mara, welcome to Created Equal.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Also with us is Mason Holland. He's a graduate student in political science at the U of M. Mason, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you for having me.
And with us is Zoe Clark, a PhD candidate in the political science department at the University of Michigan. Zoe, welcome to the show.
Good morning. And I think there was a little typo there. Zoe Walker.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's my last name. Zoe Walker. Okay, we'll get that right. Of course, we're all Wolverines here, and I just want to note that. That's pretty cool. Okay, so I want to start here. And Mara, I'll start with you. Talk about how important it is for Republicans to appeal to a more racially diverse demographic. We have seen Republicans talk about this for a long time. In my memory, one of the events that kind of stands out is the 2012 election, when Barack Obama beat Mitt Romney, and in the Black and Latino communities, he didn't just beat him. I mean, it was a drubbing. And Romney and others said, look, we have a serious problem with the base of this party, the Republican Party. It is out of touch with the demographic change that's happening in the country. And if we don't figure something out, we're not going to be able to win national elections. It is notable that Republicans have not won in the popular vote a national election since then, and they've only won two since 1988. So let's talk about what Republicans should be doing and thinking about when it comes to, again, this explosion, really, of Black and brown voters in this country.
Yeah, I think that's a important point. I mean, every voter in this country deserves to be appealed to by multiple parties, to have choices. That's the way a democracy works. And for so long, the Republican Party has really ignored Black and brown voters. So there should be some efforts. There should be some on-the-ground outreach. We know that hasn't really manifested itself. We know that Black and brown voters are less likely to be contacted by campaigns until the last weeks before
the election. Right.
Right. So it's great to see parties making any effort. There still needs to be a lot more than just, you know, going to barbershops and hiring mariachi bands. There needs to be more substance. And so it'll be great to talk more about the policy.
Yeah. When we see them reach out to Black and brown voters, what are the pitches, I guess, that they're making? What are the policies that Republicans seem to think African-Americans and Latino voters will be interested in?
I think they've really focused, and I think Zoe and Mason will have a lot to say on this, but I think their main appeal has been focusing on their economic interests. That has been kind of the drumbeat of the Republican Party, and that usually is the most important issue when you ask Black and brown and really any American voter, what's your most important issue? It's the economy that stands out. It's quality jobs. It's being able to afford my housing. It's being able to afford groceries.
Yeah. Yeah. And Zoe and Mason, don't be shy here. Just jump in when you feel ready. The thing that always stands out to me is the contrast between this Republican message of economic freedom or opportunity and the social policies of the party. I was talking with Pastor Sewell about the dramatic turn away from civil rights that the party embraced in the 60s first, but more aggressively in the 70s and in the 80s and 90s. It's really hard, I think, as an African American to take them seriously when they're appealing for my vote.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to Mara's point, a lot of people see, the Republican social policies and their campaigns against civil rights as, you know, part of the same old story of American history, right? You know, racism is sort of the constant in many Black Americans' lives. And so now the question is, okay, what else can we do? And that's why those economic appeals, those, you know, speeches and campaigns that emphasize economic policy change, you know, shrinking unemployment, getting people more jobs, that's what's really appealing to a group of voters who have just been failed over and over again by both the Republican and the Democratic Party when it comes to substantive civil rights, racial policies.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mason.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to build on what everybody else has said so far, I think Black folks are very similar to every other voter electorate that we know to exist in this country, in the sense that they want to be appealed to, right? They want politicians and policies that address their interests. And they'll be willing to listen to whoever. That's why I think on one hand we can say, yeah, Trump has said a lot of crazy things and the policies haven't matched the rhetoric, right? But at the same time, if he is coming forward and he's coming to the table and he is, like Pastor Sewell said, actually reaching out and he's looking to come and talk to the community, that breaks not only from what Republican politicians have been doing and have done for the last 20 years, but also from what a lot of Democrats do. So I think black voters really just want to be spoken to, and want to be addressed, and really want to be appealed to at the end of the day. And yeah. they'll be willing to listen to whoever really comes to the table and does that.
And so when someone like Donald Trump comes to Detroit, as I asked Pastor Sue, I think the first question always has to be, he believes that, we cheated in 2020, that somehow there was fraud, massive fraud in cities like Detroit that resulted in his loss. I think it's hard to get past that to see what else he might be saying or to even listen to the economic message, because, again, the fundamental question in America always has been about a full African-American participation in our democracy. That is the crux of the inequality that we face. Is it pointless for someone like Donald Trump to come? I mean, is there any chance of reaching black voters with that message?
I think we'd all probably agree there's not a good chance that he's gonna. I think between now, we're sitting here in June, almost July, between now and November, there's not much that he's gonna be able to do to deviate from the messages that he's already put out and what he's already said before. But reaching out never hurts, right? The people that support him are going to continue to support him. And I think he still has the potential to pull off a few undecideds that you guys have talked about earlier, who really can't differentiate between the two parties, although I think we'd also agree that there is a difference between the parties qualitatively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can still be swayed. And I think because he knows that, he's still going out and he's still campaigning. I know there was reports of his campaign when they talked about appealing to black voters. They were saying, listen, we're trying to go into these areas and we're not trying to win these cities. We're not trying to, you know, pull off a miracle in Detroit. But what we are trying to do is pull off 20-30% of the black vote. And we are confident that we can do that. Now, the extent to which they
that's
will
an
be
incredible
successful,
number, by the
100%,
way.
100%. Yeah. Now, the extent to which they'll be successful, I don't think any of us are high on that. But that's their goal. And they can definitely still peel off a couple of voters. Now, how many? Not sure, but
yeah.
They can try.
Go ahead, Zoe.
Yeah, and I think, too, we also have to remember that when Trump is coming to a place like Detroit and trying to attract black voters, he's not messaging the same way he does when he's, you know, in rural Wisconsin or even in more rural parts of Michigan. The policies that he's focusing on and even the rhetoric that he's focusing on is really targeted towards the things that black voters are attracted to. And so he can sort of play this political game of, you know, ignoring the racist rhetoric that he used to describe, quote unquote, election fraud in 2020 and pivot to saying, well, actually, I'm going to bring jobs to Detroit. I'm going to bring opportunities to Detroit. And hearing those words, especially for somebody who's not constantly engaged with politics like we are, you know, that's really compelling.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Mara.
And I think the other thing that we forget is he doesn't have to persuade voters to support him. He would be just as effective if he persuaded voters to not support Biden, to stay home.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of his appeal, is just the negative, the anti-Biden rhetoric as much as the pro-Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of where I was going to go next, was whether this is a genuine effort to attract African-American voters to the Republican Party versus an effort to just make sure they don't go out and vote Democratic. The first time Trump ran for president in 2016, the very reason he won Michigan was because there were about 20,000 voters in Detroit who had shown up in 2012 who did not show up in 2016. Trump ends up winning the state by a margin of about 10 or 11,000 votes. If those Detroiters had voted, likely he would have lost. And so I think there's, I guess, a fear of the kind of cynicism behind what is really going on, given that so much of the Republican agenda isn't about supporting the African-American community. Are they really trying to get votes, or are they just trying to get people to sit home?
I would guess they don't really care.
It doesn't matter, right?
They both have the same effects.
The outcome would be the same, right? Mm-hmm.
And it's disturbing how effective it is when he makes these appeals to, you know, voter fraud. He's just, like you said, encouraging this type of democratic cynicism or distrust in the process, which is a really effective means to encourage people to just be like, forget it. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And we see that, you know, the Detroit Metro Area Community Survey Study does all these surveys, and we see just the growing number of Detroiters who are saying the parties are the same, the candidates are the same. I don't trust the process.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Mara Ostfeld, Mason Holland, and Zoe Walker about Republican appeals to black and brown voters, both here in Detroit and around the state and around the country. We want to start hearing from you, our listeners, about this issue. Are you a non-white Detroiter, a Metro Detroiter? What would it take for you to vote Republican? Are you somebody who went out and voted for Donald Trump in 2016 or 2020? Give us an idea of why. What about his policies appeal to you as an African-American or a Latino-American? Talk about this trip that Donald Trump made to Detroit to appeal to black voters. Do you see that as genuine, or does it somehow seem like a cynical play to try to get back to the White House? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We're talking in advance of the first presidential debate of 2024 about the Republican appeal to non-white voters, to African-Americans, to Latinos, and others, something that the party has been talking about for an awful long time, a recognized need to include more people in the base of their voters because the country is changing, because it is getting blacker and browner. But how successful have they been at that? And what is the appeal? What's the message that they're sending to these communities to try to get our votes? We've got three great guests with us who have spent a long time thinking and writing about these issues. Mara Ostfeld is an associate research scientist in the Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan. Mason Holland is a graduate student in the political science PhD program at U of M. And Zoe Walker is a PhD candidate in the political science department at U of M as well. We want to hear from you, our listeners, during this conversation. Give us a call and let us know if you're a non-white voter. How appealing are Republican appeals to get your vote? What did you think of Donald Trump visiting Michigan recently, visiting Detroit, speaking at a black church? Is that a genuine outreach? Are there things about his ideas, about his platform that legitimately appeal to you, that you think would be better than what the Democrats and their candidate, Joe Biden, are offering? Or do you see it as more of a cynical ploy, either to suppress votes, get people just not to vote for the Democrats, or to somehow manipulate voters? We would love to hear about your experiences with this. Also, if you're somebody who happened to go to 180 Church to see Donald Trump and hear what he had to say, I'd love to hear what your reaction was to that. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and you can hashtag created equal, or you can at WDET, and we can make you part of the conversation that way. Before we get to callers, and we're starting to get people queued up to join the conversation here, I want to talk just a little about the things that the Republican Party used to do that it doesn't do anymore, and kind of ground this in that kind of historical perspective. What turned the party of Lincoln, which is going way back, away from the causes that that it used to espouse? I mean, if you go back to the 60s and look at polling at the time that the Civil Rights Act was passed, for instance, you had pluralities in both parties in Congress that supported the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. That's how those things got passed. After that, they become almost exclusively Democratic issues. The Republican Party goes in a very different direction. Let's remind listeners of why and how that happened to put Republicans in the position they're in now.
Yeah, I think the classic argument is that after the passage of the 1964 Voting Rights Act, there was the large majority of Black voters then supported the Democratic Party, who implemented and passed and passed the act. And after that, that was read as a cue to many white voters, and so we saw, what many refer to as white flight from the Democratic Party. This perception that the Democratic Party was now the party of anti-racism or racial justice, and so a lot of racial conservatives left, and that's how kind of what's come to characterize the Republican Party since then.
Yeah,
and I would just like add on to that. I think there was also sort of a shift towards the Democratic Party kind of culturally aligning itself with Black Americans too. I think about Bill Clinton in the 1990s and how he, you know, went on Arsenio Hall's show and like played the
played
saxophone.
Played the saxophone. Everyone right. thought he was so cool, right?
Right. Yeah. People were calling him the first Black president back then.
Right. I don't know how many people feel that way now.
Not right. Not now. But at the time it was, you know, it was unique to have a president really going to the black spaces and appealing there.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's get started with Kelly in Oak Park. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen.
Uh-huh. How are you?
Good. So basically my thought is that this is just a play on getting quick votes from Black Americans. It's not genuine. I feel like the party's platform in general is to disenfranchise Black voters, in that, you know, they're for book bans and just any kind of diversity, the diversity inclusion. They're against that. They're against voter rights. And, Detroit is a Black city. So, of course, they're going to, try to get as many votes as they can. And they're just appealing to what I would consider low-hanging fruit, which it would be money.
So, Kelly, let me ask you this. I think that's a pretty good assessment of what the message looks like, but what would a more genuine message look like to you, or is it even possible for Republicans to appeal in that way? I mean, what would they have to do, in your estimation, to seem to you as though they were more seriously interested in your support rather than just your vote?
I would say to allow more fairness in the voting process, and to stop being disenfranchising of all voters in general. I mean, to give people more say in the political process as far as what we all need. We need housing, we need jobs, we need basic lifestyle changes that would help everyone. Mm-hmm. But for more specifically for Black people, I mean, we're always the ones who seem to get the short end of the stick.
Kelly, I really appreciate the call and that really thoughtful response. What does the research and what does polling tell us about what Kelly's talking about here with the issues that African-American voters actually do care about and worry about?
Yeah, I think one thing I think similar to all Americans that Mara had brought up earlier is that, like most Americans, Black Americans care about education. They care about the economy. You know, we see whether it's YouGov or Pew, you know, we're talking about polling in the 70 and 80% of how many Black American or Black respondents in the samples, you know, value these issues as the highest priority. So I think addressing those issues is always going to be important. But then also just in terms of polling between the presidents, I think one of the things that I think we talked about a lot is how this swing towards Trump, this swing towards the GOP really has, I think, been overinflated. It's been overemphasized because we can see from polling that although Biden is not polling as strong as he may have been a couple of years ago, as strong mm-hmm. as he was in 2020, he's still polling relatively high and really in line with Democratic numbers of the past elections that we've seen before. So if anything, I think a lot of the dismay that I think comes from this election with looking at Trump or looking at Biden, I think has a lot more to do with being disillusioned with what the Democratic Party has been doing in relation to Black issues than it has with Trump doing better. Like even from Kelly's points, Trump says one thing, does another. Right. And I think for some people that are not as cued in to what's been going on, you know, he may speak to those people. But I think for the vast majority of not just Black Detroiters, but Black Americans, period, they can see through that. They'll weigh things like his conviction, his past inadequacies on Black issues against him. And I think we'll see what we've saw before.
Yeah. I want to ask about his conviction and something that Pastor Sewell said when he was here earlier today, that Trump's legal troubles and you know, a possible, you know, sentence to prison gives him a connection with the African-American community that that allows him to relate in some way. I hear a lot of people mm-hmm. Speaking that way about African-American voters. And I suppose, you know, at least on the surface, at least it is a commonality, right? It is something that he does have in common with too many members of the African-American community. But is that a legit, you know, entree, I guess, to talking about support? Is that a good way to talk about criminal justice issues, for instance?
No.
No.
That's a pretty simple answer, right? No way.
There's nothing about his experience in the criminal justice system that was representative of any other American.
Of what most
experience.
People experience, of course.
Right. Yeah, 100%. His ability to talk back to the judge, his mm-hmm. ability to defy blatant orders. Mm-hmm. Most Americans would not be able to, would be incarcerated for that. And he had the money, he had the sway to avoid that. And to say that he has anything that's similar to the experiences of other Americans who are interacting with the criminal justice system is a really illustrative example of his complete lack of awareness mm-hmm. of what the standard experience is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This connection with the community at large. I mean, mm-hmm. he is a convicted felon who's mm-hmm. running in a country where most convicted felons cannot even vote,
right?
So, I mean, I think if anything, I think we've seen from the polling as well, it is an argument that most Black Americans find offensive. Especially as you refer to as the entree, if that's what the lead-in is, mm-hmm. To say that we have commonalities based on our time in you know, being in prison, that's a low bar. It's a very low bar. Right. Yeah.
But it's also not the first time that I think he has tried this kind of appeal, and Pastor Sewell referred to this as well. His pardoning of Kwame Kilpatrick mm-hmm. was seen by many people as an appeal to this sensibility that, look, he understands somehow the unfairness that African Americans sometimes face in the criminal justice system. Now we can get into a long conversation about whether Kwame Kilpatrick is a good example of that. But I mm-hmm. think for a lot of Detroiters, it did send a message that, oh, wait a second. I thought what happened to him was maybe excessive or unfair. And Donald Trump seems to understand that.
I think it's tempting to characterize, right, the pardoning that way. But going back to Mason's point, it's less a reflection of, you know, satisfaction with Trump or support for Trump, and more a reflection of how much people feel that the Democratic Party has abandoned them. Mm. And so when they see, you know, something like a pardon of someone who was unfairly convicted, even if it's coming from a Republican, you know, it's like, wow, that's something. What, you know, what has Joe Biden done, for example, besides push for, you know, more funding for police as far as his criminal justice policy?
Mm-hmm. And to kind of build on that as well, Kwame Kilpatrick is not most Black Detroiters' father or brother or cousin or uncle. So I think it's a, if anything, it's a, it's an example, right? It's a performative one, but it's not one that reaches most Black Detroiters. And it's one that you can promote as a highlight of what Trump has done in these issues. But at the end of the day, it doesn't affect most Black Detroiters. And I think that that's what people need to focus on in engaging with this political cycle. What is actually tangibly being done for Black Americans? And I think in Trump's case, we can see that on one hand, we have a song and dance, but on the other, mm-hmm. there's not much substance.
And I think going back to he was president. He had the opportunity to make significant reforms yes. in the criminal mm-hmm. justice system. Yes. And he repeatedly chose not to. He repeatedly chose to say there are people on both sides of this, you know, protest, white nationalist protest in Charlottesville. So he chose not to make more substantive, broader reforms in the criminal justice system.
Yeah. What about the criticisms or the, I guess, the coolness that the African-American community seems to be feeling for the Democratic message this time? Not as much enthusiasm for Joe Biden now as there was in 2020, and of course he doesn't compare favorably with you know the enthusiasm that people had for Obama, of course. But when you look at the record here of what this president has been able to achieve, there are a number of things that have really improved life for all kinds of Americans, but especially for African Americans. And I say over and over again that when we look at child poverty numbers right now, for mm-hmm. instance, mm-hmm. they're at all-time lows. I mean, it's hard to overstate, I think, the impact that something like that has on the African American community, on other Black and Brown communities. So why is that not resonating in the way that we might expect it to?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I also think, Stephen, I challenge even listeners. When's the last time you heard of these things happening? When's the last time you saw a Democratic ran ad, a Biden endorsed ad that said, this is what we're doing, mm-hmm. not just for Black Americans, but for Americans, period. That's not something that gets discussed, I think, enough. But also on the other hand, the rhetoric, I think, by the Democratic Party, by Biden, is not one that shows any urgency to address mm-hmm. the issues that Black Americans face. I think at least in 2020, you had the conversations around George Floyd. Even mm-hmm. Trump had a platinum plan in 2020 that he unveiled for Black Americans and said, this is my Black agenda. The lack of attention paid towards Black voters, I think, you know, we may not see it manifest in terms of voting behavior. These may not be voters that swing the other way and vote for Trump, but they are going to be voters that if you ask them, hey, if you could replace Biden, would you? They absolutely would. If you could, if they could address you with material appeals, would that be something that would get you to support them in higher numbers? I think most people would. I think that most Black Americans have been disillusioned by the Democrats, who have not talked enough about what they've done, have not done enough, but have also not made real tangible efforts to connect with them, have not made efforts beyond trying to go to a barbershop or to say, if you don't vote for me, you're not Black. Right.
Go ahead, Mara.
I think it's tricky, too, because the most salient feature of people's day-to-day lives is mm-hmm. often like the cost of groceries yeah. or the mm-hmm. cost of housing.
Sure.
And that's such a difficult issue for someone in the executive branch to address. Mm-hmm. And so we see him trying to take action on that. But it's just a hard thing to move, yeah. especially on the timeline that we're dealing with.
Sure, sure. Okay, it was really great to have the three of you here, Mara Osfeld, Mason Holland, and Zoe Walker, thanks so much for being here with us on Created Equal.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Also, a note, John on the East Side called and pointed out that Trump did not pardon Kwame Kilpatrick, our former mayor. He actually commuted his sentence. There is a distinction there, and I love that our listeners listen closely enough to make sure that I'm saying things right and not getting them wrong. Okay, that is going to do it for us on Created Equal. Come back tomorrow when we are going to talk about the presidential debate, the first presidential debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, which is going to happen tonight. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and by David Lines. Our engineer is Nate Bender. The audio editing is by Connor Anderson, and the music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, which is a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.